Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good news, bad news, crazy news, as usual for conservatives. And, Jim, the good news is that despite the media's and the president's, of course, best attempt to blame Republicans for every bad thing that could conceivably happen after the implementation of the sequester, the American people, for the most part, aren't buying it, at least in the numbers they once were or that we might expect them to, given the president's ability to demagogue. New CBS poll, 38% do blame congressional Republicans, 33%, though, blame him. And the fact that he even got lampooned for it on Saturday Night Live shows that it looks like his heavy-handed tactics went too far here.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, this is early. We are only in day four of sequestered America. You may have noticed, and now the new spin is not that the sky is falling. It's that the sky is 2% lower than it was, and it's declining rapidly. We're used to, because a lot of conservatives are used to watching House Speaker John Boehner and the other other House leaders blow it, find new ways to completely screw up the negotiations and give all their ground and all that stuff. And it hasn't happened yet. And you look at those poll numbers, the president has really, you know, locked himself into this, you know, look, you know, the apocalypse is coming. It's going to be the worst thing ever. And then right back on Friday, all of a sudden he said, this is not true that the apocalypse is coming, as some people have said. Some people like yourself, Mr. President. And now you see his all the cabinets getting themselves in trouble. Arne Duncan is saying, okay, technically I shouldn't have used the term pink slips because no one's actually losing their jobs as a result of the sequester, at least this school year. Janet Napolitano yesterday, in addition to saying she had no idea that all these, you know, illegal immigrants are going to be set out of the detention centers, don't worry, they're totally, totally safe, except for the guy who did the child abuse and assault and battery. And then, of course, then she says, well, look, you know, they're going to have really long lines at airport, at, you know, TSA lines at airports. Now, if you've flown at any point in the last 10 years or so, you're like, oh, long TSA lines? You know, that's breaking news, film at 11. But apparently it's going to be, you know, 200% worse than usual. The groping was going to take that much longer, apparently. And it turns out, actually, you look at the various websites that the federal government provides to, you know, let you measure the delays, most people say, no, it's about normal. Now, conceivably, people are so terrified of sequester that they're not flying anymore because the planes are going to fall out of the skies because of the air traffic controllers and stuff. But so far, most Americans aren't feeling the sequester. And as a result of that, the president looks kind of silly and foolish. And all of the leverage that he thought he was going to have, because the American people are going to say, no, don't you dare cut federal spending by 2%. Oh, no, this is the worst thing ever. It's not happening. And congressional Republicans feel pretty good about what they're doing. The one other kind of angle adding to this is that President Obama has already said he is not – we're running up against our continuing resolution debt ceiling limit. He is not going to shut the government down as a result of that. Now, traditionally, you know, we get close to one of these great fiscal deadlines and you know, cats and dogs living together and you know, meteors from the sky are on the other side of the fiscal deadline. And Boehner and Republicans say, well, we have to accept the deal that Obama has put on the table. All of a sudden, it's Obama saying, I'm not going to shut down the government. That's usually his trump card. And he's kind of realizing that he can't be the one who says, I'm going to veto the spending bill. I'm going to veto all this stuff that they've put forth here. You know, all of a sudden, he realizes that he's got some skin in the game at this point as well, which is kind of an unusual set of circumstances for the president. It's almost as if there's accountability. So I'm going to close with kind of one great observation from John Podoretz of the New York Post, who observes, why is Obama seeing his approval rating and things come down after winning all these previous budget fights? Why is he suddenly finding himself in trouble with this one? Because he's there, meaning that he's the president. And people hold the president accountable, depending on who, you know, what the blame game, all that kind of stuff. Look, it's your watch, Mr. President. American people don't like to see what they're seeing, and it's your job to fix it. So fix it.
Yeah, it's about time. The first 4 years, apparently,
the first 4 years were practice, apparently.
Wow. And the Republicans said they'd have more leverage after fiscal cliff. We'll see if that happens. We know they put forth, at least House Republicans, the stopgap bill that would essentially keep spending the way it is, minus the sequester cuts. And a lot of conservatives aren't happy about that. But it certainly will put Obama in a difficult position to say that that's being, you know, draconian in any way. So once again, he'll be playing defense there, hopefully. 46-46 approval, disapproval on some of those latest numbers. All right, on to martini number two now. And Dennis Rodman has populated our crazy martini both Friday and Monday. Now he's sort of in number two, but not really. The The shockingly bad news is that apparently he did not solve all the problems between the United States and North Korea, because now, just 48 hours after he left, or at least 48 hours after he was on George Stephanopoulos' show, saying what a great guy Kim Jong-un is and he doesn't want war. Apparently Kim Jong-un didn't get that memo because he has now threatened to end the ceasefire that's been in place for 60 years due to the fact that the U.S. and South Korea have held some military exercises together and that there's probably tougher U.N. sanctions coming as a result of the recent nuclear test. So Dennis Rodman will have to, I guess, settle for Undersecretary of State for now.
Adopting our slogan for Nevada, way to go, Rodman, way to go. You know, what makes this a particularly bad martini is we don't know whether this is the typical saber rattling from the North Koreans or not. It does seem rather ironic upon, having sent their goodwill ambassador with the multicolored hair and the paisley jacket to George Stephanopoulos to say, apparently, literally, Rodman is telling people Kim Jong-un just wants to talk about basketball with Obama. So clearly they do have some common ground.
Yes.
They both run countries. And they're both interested in basketball. But you look at North Korea. You look at Syria. You look at Iran and its nuclear program. You look at the tensions between China and Japan over those islands out in the Pacific. The French intervention in Mali. There are a whole lot of trouble spots around the world. It just kind of feels like the cauldron is starting to bubble. And we're kind of focused on our own internal economic issues and our spending issues. One of these things sooner or later is going to blow up. And the question is, just how badly does it blow up? If we're lucky, it's just garden variety tensions between the Chinese and Japanese and not, say, North Korea going nuclear. Oh, wait, they already have, And if we recall a couple of years ago, they started shelling those islands that were South Korean territory.
Right.
When the North Koreans choose to rattle that saber, they tend to rattle it to the point where somebody gets stabbed, which is at that point you're not really rattling anymore. Now you're actually taking military action. So hoping the administration is on top of this and monitoring this, I feel safer knowing that Chuck Hagel and John Kerry are on top of this and all systems go. My guess is that before he's done, John Kerry will figure out some way to promise foreign aid to someone over this. So.
That's probably the default option just about on every foreign policy crisis. Back to the sequester, in a way, for Martini number three now, because, of course, during his sky is falling phase of this debate, the president was talking about first responders. He had them all lined up behind him saying they're going to lose their jobs and teachers. And we talked about the other threats, TSA and all this sorts of other stuff. So other people are saying, well, why do we need to do that when there are some other areas where perhaps we could trim a little bit? And these don't add up to $85 billion, but it shows that there is largesse in government that could certainly go. In the last 2 years alone, the Obama administration has spent almost $400,000 on oil portraits. Taxpayers for Common Sense pointing out that, just on a couple of examples, the oil portrait for outgoing EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson cost $38,350. No word if there was an oil portrait for the fake person behind the fake account where she got her
Richard emails. Windsor. Yeah, I really want to see Richard Windsor's portrait.
Air Force Secretary Michael Donnelly's portrait, $41,200. And Commerce Secretary John Bryson, who was only on the job for 8 months, $22,500. So apparently they got the knockoff oil portrait guy to do that one, if that's considered a bargain. But I don't know if these are normally that expensive, Jim, but something tells me that could probably go before we start firing cops.
Well, first of all, Greg, I'm very, very disappointed the administration is doing oil portraits. I was really hoping for alternative fuels portraits. my guess is that Tom Vilsack has some ethanol mixed in with the paint.
I hope so.
In his there. First of all, I'm marveling that anyone's really going to want to remember Tom Vilsack. But anyway. You look at this amount, as you said, $400,000 on official portraits, because we need to have those, and photographs just won't do. the headline of Drudge today, the TSA spent $50 million on new uniforms right before the sequester deadline. I went into the federal contract site today and found out that we made sure right in late February we got an extra $15 million in economic aid to Pakistan. Right before that, it was already a 20-some million, and they upped it to $37 million, an extra $15 million, because, Pakistan – great folks, food folks and flag burning. And that's, we got to get them there. We've seen Kerry announce extra aid to the Syrian rebels, an extra $250 million economic aid to Egypt. Are any of these things getting hit by sequestration? can we take a haircut at any of those things? So all these expending is crazy. The kind of, to respin this as the good martini, is that sequestration gives the media a million and one excuses to do stories on Really? Your tax dollars are paying for this sort of thing? And it's worth noting that it was Yahoo News that was doing the portrait story. This is not, you know, us crazy right-wingers calling attention to this and saying this is ridiculous.
Right.
Ludicrous federal spending is a fantastic story for all across the media. There might even theoretically be some liberals that would be offended by this sort of thing. And, you know, the government can't cry poverty when it's spending stuff on portraits and new uniforms and stuff like that. That kind of strikes a lot of people as a frivolity when we have a $15 trillion debt.
Yeah. Tom Vilsack quoted in the article telling ABC News, honestly, you know, there are so many questions I'd be happy to answer about our budget, but I just think this is a really small kind of question. $400,000 on oil portraits. His was also $22,500. You know, that's somebody's yearly income.
For a lot of folks, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, if you're going to say, oh, we're going to cut, I believe the USDA is talking about meat inspections. And I'm not kidding when I say somebody said that. First of all, you think, okay, well, they'd space it out. I am told, I still need to double check this, so listeners, take this with as many grains of salt as appropriate, but that they were going to have everybody, like all 11 days, every USDA meat inspector was going to shut off the exact same day. So, like, for, you know, instead of like rotating, okay, you guys in this part of the country, you take your furlough day, you guys over here take that furlough day next Tuesday, everybody in the country was going to stop inspecting meat for a day. This is some sort of like vast vegan conspiracy, I'm suspecting, or my wife is behind it to get me to eat healthier or something. But the idea being like, you know, of all the cuts, really, because, you know, honestly, like the portraits would be my first spot, you know.
Not to mention, what was it, a $1.4 billion that the Obama spent on themselves? I know some of that's, you know, Secret Service and what have you, but it's way above what, you know, the Bushes or anybody else.
I have yet to check whether the White House chef is considered essential essential government employee during the government shutdowns.
I'm guessing if they are directly related to the Obamas, they're considered essential, would be probably my guess there. Wow. Well, I guess we're going to scrap our oil portraits if they're that expensive.
I am working on one with a pen now. It's a happy smiley face with a... See? That's you, Greg. That looks just like you. Picture the stick figure, folks.
Yes.
So visual jokes work so well on radio.
The doodles are so much cheaper. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.